gun violence by a Chicago police
officer.
Will,
but we thank you so much for being with us, Will Calloway and Justin Blake. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM Community Radio.
Join KBOO every Friday at 5:30 p.m. for Counterspin, a show that provides a critical examination of major media stories and exposes what the mainstream media missed. Counterspin exposes and highlights censored stories, sexism, racism, and homophobia in the news, the power of corporate influence, gaffes and goofs by leading TV pundits, and more. That's every Friday at 5:30 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Mayor Wheeler bans houseless camping near major roadways. Health experts say Oregon is on the downslope of its Omicron surge. And in international news, the Winter Olympics open in Beijing, China. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, February 4th, 2022. I'm Josh Salem. Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler will restrict houseless encampments on major roadways effective immediately, according to a Friday press conference. It will come in the form of an emergency order, prompted by new data released Thursday that showed 70% of the traffic fatalities in Portland last year were unhoused people. City Commissioner Dan Ryan was reportedly given only 2.5 hours to review the order. Commissioner Joanne Hardesty tweeted that her office and the Bureau of Transportation were not consulted at all. It is unclear what the city intends to do with unhoused folks who are camped by major roadways or on state and city properties. Wheeler said in a press conference that they need to go, quote, somewhere safer, end quote. There is a cause and effect relationship, though, that campers commonly rest near freeways and interchanges because they've been swept out of neighborhoods. The order to ban camping near highways and large streets won't be the end, according to Wheeler. In the press conference, he said the action is, quote, the first in a series of mayoral actions I intend on taking to speed the city's recovery, end quote. Housing and transportation advocates wrote Wheeler a letter decrying his action, and it was signed by Street Roots, Central City Concern, Oregon Walks, the Urban League of Portland, and others. The letter says that sweeping unhoused people from the sides of roadways has never been proposed as a solution to the housing and transportation problems in Portland. It goes on to state that the city of Portland has in fact broken the law set forth in the 2017 ruling Martin versus Boise, which only allows cities to sweep unhoused encampments if there is enough shelter provided in the city for them. The letter says the city has flagrantly violated this law, claiming health and safety as sufficient reason to sweep people off of city property. In June of last year, Commissioner Ryan committed to creating 6 safe rest villages in the city by the end of 2021, but those have failed to materialize. Only 3 sites have been officially named. Oregon Health and Science University revised its coronavirus forecast, saying that we're hitting the peak of the Omicron surge now, and that Oregon's performance was much better than other states. OHSU experts say hospitalizations are peaking now at around 1,100 hospitalized in the latest figures. The average peak elsewhere in the U.S. is about a third higher than Oregon. The state also fared better than it did in the Delta surge, Dr. Peter Graven is the director of the OHSU Office of Analytics. He says Oregonians should be proud that they took action early and got their booster shots. Dr. Graven expects we'll be less likely to see more big spikes of COVID in the future, since so many more people have immunity, even if it does wane over time. Even if overall Oregon may be coming down from the peak, it's different across the state, with a higher rate of cases in southern and eastern Oregon compared to the Portland metro area, which is starting to wane. Dr. Graven likened the peak in hospitalizations to a hiking trip.
Well, you know, the reality is that the Omicron surge kind of came out of nowhere on us. We saw this variant come and we've had a dramatic increase. And as you're climbing that hill, it's much like a hiker. On the way up, it really works your heart. On the way down, you're still getting work, but it's on your knees. And the reality is, you know, that the knees are the ones that are sore for the next week. So we still have more to come. And, you know, we're all in this together. And hopefully we can prevent that decline from causing us any problems.
That was Dr. Peter Graven, Director of the Office of Analytics at OHSU. The Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals upheld Portland's decision to deny fossil fuels transport facility Zenith Energy a land use permit to grow its operation. The board asked that Portland provide further explanation about why Zenith's expansion doesn't meet the city's climate goals. The city committed to reducing its carbon emissions by 80% by 2050. Environmental groups are celebrating the decision, even though it is still one in a long line of legal battles it seems Zenith is willing to take. The energy company is allowed to continue operating while the land use authorizations are debated. The Winter Olympics have begun amidst a pandemic, lockdowns, and boycotts. Chinese President Xi Jinping declared the games open on Friday in the same national stadium used for the 2008 Summer Olympics. Chinese athletes Jia Zhaowen and Diniger Ila Mu Zhang delivered the Olympic flame. Beijing is the first city to have hosted both the Summer and Winter Games. Because of the pandemic, the most recent Summer and Winter events were held within 6 months of each other. Despite coronavirus, many world leaders were in attendance at the stadium, including Russian President Vladimir Putin. China views hosting the Games as confirmation of its status as a global superpower. Outsiders feel the games still reflect the country's authoritarian ways. Chinese authorities have attempted to increase control over Hong Kong, become more confrontational with Taiwan, and intern Muslims in the far west in an action the U.S. government labeled as genocide. The country is also cracking down on dissent. Tennis star Peng Shuai accused a Communist Party official of sexual assault, but she has disappeared from public view, and discussion of her claim is heavily censored. Chinese artist Ai Weiwei, who consulted on the stadium, is now one of the country's most famous dissidents and lives in exile. Olympic organizers had previously stated they hoped hosting the games would pressure the Chinese leaders to improve their human rights record. Concerns of hosting an Olympic event in the midst of a pandemic persist, though the host country claims some of the lowest rates of death and infection from coronavirus, partly because of strict lockdowns. There is daily testing of all attendees and lengthy quarantines for those coming back positive. The US, Britain, Australia, and Canada have imposed a diplomatic boycott on the games, keeping their officials from appearing with Chinese leaders while still allowing athletes to compete. N95 masks are now available at grocery stores and pharmacies across Oregon for free after new action from the Biden administration. The heavier duty masks are seen as critical to stop the spread of coronavirus and its variants. Fred Meyer, QFC, CVS, Safeway, and Rite Aid have received supplies and will allow three per person while these supplies last. KBOO's Caitlin Backus has more on the importance of N95 access in Oregon.
N95 masks will soon become available for free at drugstores like CVS and Walgreens. Experts say these masks are the most effective in stopping the spread of the Omicron variant of COVID-19. Today, we sit down with Dr. Nikki Vars-Mikuloff, a scientist at 3M, which is a company known for manufacturing these masks and other health and safety products.
To start off, would you mind introducing yourself?
My name is Nikki Vars-Mikuloff, and I'm a scientist here at 3M Company.
Thank you. And so, yeah, we're here today to talk to you about N95 masks. The Biden administration is going to make N95 masks widely available through drugstores like CVS and Walgreens, which are recommended for the Omicron surge we're seeing right now. Why is it important for people to be wearing N95 this time around?
Because the Omicron variant is so very infectious, of the different face coverings that we have available to us, the N95s are going to be the most protective. And so they're going to help, you know, reduce people's exposure to Omicron if it's in the air.
How do N95 respirators work?
N95 respirators have this really sophisticated filter media in them, and it can filter out really big particles like pollen, or really, really small particles like the ones that might contain viruses. And when you put them on and they seal to your face, it means the air that you're breathing is actually going through that filter media, so it's getting filtered.
So there's an N95 mask and a KN95 mask. What's the difference between them, and is one of them more effective?
N95 respirators meet the U.S. standards, the U.S. government standards, and they're approved in the U.S. A lot of them, like 3Ms, we make them here in the U.S., and we've designed them to fit the faces of the U.S. population. Each country tends to have their own regulations around respirator masks, and so the KN95 meet the China regulations.
With all this new focus on N95s and folks scrambling to get the right protective equipment, there's bound to be some fakes on the market too. What advice do you have for people when buying a mask to avoid buying fake ones?
There are concerns about fake N95s on the market, and it's important that you do some research when you're looking to purchase them. First of all, make sure you're buying from a store that you trust, whether it's online or it's a retail store that you trust it. You look for a name brand of the manufacturer that you trust. And then also look out for things like, you know, are the words all spelled correctly? Does the English have good grammar? And if you have any doubts, you can always contact the manufacturer. For example, we have a website, which is 3m.com/myN95, and that's going to give people a lot of tips for how to find an authentic N95.
I'm sure you and everyone listening has at one time or another seen someone wearing surgical masks or cloth masks wrong. This is important, though, because an ill-fitting mask makes them less effective. Do you have tips for people wanting to ensure their masks do fit correctly?
Sure. With N95 respirators, obviously they need to go over your nose and mouth, but you really need to make sure that you're using both of the headbands, and one headband should go around your neck, and the other headband should go at the crown of your head. And then you want to make sure that you're pushing down that metal clip over the nose really firmly. And this will help make sure that the edge of the respirator is touching your face all the way around. So when you breathe, the air is going through that filter media, and there's no air sneaking in around the edges of the mask.
And is it safe to reuse a mask? And if so, how many times can you do that safely?
And the N95 respirators, they're designed to be put on and taken off a number of times. So it's important that you treat them carefully. But if they get dirty or damaged, then you want to get a new one. So you can reuse them as long as those straps are still keeping it tight against your face, and as long as that metal nose clip can still make a good firm seal around your nose. But if it gets too dirty or it breaks, then it's time to get a new one.
Okay, and who should be looking for an N95 mask when they become available? Are N95s recommended for children?
N95s are really recommended for adults, and they're recommended for when you're in, you know, crowded situations as part of all of the things that we can do, like vaccination and distancing, to help reduce cases of COVID. N95s are really made for adult faces, so very young children might find them too big, and they might need to find a different type of mask.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me today. This has been really helpful. Our listeners really appreciate the insight on the N95s.
Great. Thank you so much.
That was an interview with Dr. Nikki Vars-McCullough, a scientist and expert on N95 masks at 3M. N95 masks will soon become available for free at pharmacies and drugstores around the country. With KBOO News, I'm Caitlin Backus.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. At 6, it's the first episode of KBOO's Black History and Future series. You don't want to miss it. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy, with an overnight low of 42 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be partly sunny, with a high of 49. Today in history, in 1913, civil rights activist Rosa Parks was born. Parks is best known for her pivotal role in the Montgomery bus boycott, and she was honored by the U.S. Congress as the First Lady of Civil Rights. The quote of the day is from Parks, who said, quote, "Without vision, people perish, and without courage and inspiration, dreams die," end quote. Brown gave her final annual State of the State address yesterday. She outlined her legislative agenda as well as priorities for her final year in office. Governor Brown cannot run again because of term limits. She became governor in 2015 after John Kitzhaber resigned amidst an influence-peddling scandal. She won a special election in November of 2016 and re-election in November of 2018. Her term ends on January 9, 2023. Brown's speech marks the start of Oregon's 35-day legislative session. She said her 2022 priorities include affordable housing, being ready for climate-related disasters, bolstering the state's workforce, and providing accessible childcare. She has proposed a $200 million workforce development plan aimed at prioritizing populations disproportionately impacted upon by COVID-19 and existing disparities. These include people of color, women, low-income individuals, veterans, rural Oregonians, and those incarcerated or formerly incarcerated. Her plan also includes $100 million to expand access to childcare and $92 million for no-cost construction training to support career advancement. Brown's biggest proposed spending package, at $400 million, is for affordable housing. It addresses pricing and construction gaps, aims to preserve existing housing, builds more rental units, provides homeowner support, and invests in houseless infrastructure development. Brown said, quote, "In my last year as governor, I view every day, every moment, as one more opportunity to focus on the big and bold work we still have to do," end quote. Governor Kate Brown's state-of-the-art address has kicked off Oregon's short legislative session, and organizations such as the Native American Youth and Family Center are watching closely. Eric Tegetoff has more.
Brown gave her final address as Oregon governor virtually this year. She outlined a host of priorities, including a $400 million proposal to address affordable housing. The focus on housing and homelessness aligns with the center's goals. William Miller is head of the NEA Action Fund.
Continued investments in communities that are most impacted is really the most important thing. With COVID and all the issues we've experienced with that, our communities are continuing to struggle. And our youth are struggling, right, in terms of our education and being out of the classroom for so long because of COVID.
In education, the NEA Action Fund is supporting money to provide professional learning opportunities to educators on ethnic studies standards and funding for the Department of Early Learning and Care. In her speech, Brown proposed a $100 million investment in child care. Brown also touted her work advocating for tribal nations in Oregon. Miller says the Legislative Commission on Indian Services has good relationships with tribal partners.
I know Governor Brown has worked to do that as well, and so I think it'll also be really important for whoever the next governor becomes to continue that same relationship building and fostering that relationship with our tribal partners.
Brown says addressing racial disparities in housing and the workforce will be key for her remaining time in office. The NEA Action Fund is supporting a measure from the governor that would expand access to culturally relevant preschool. The organization also hopes lawmakers approve a bill to declare racism a public health crisis, which would create two mobile health units. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Lawmakers received classified briefings on Russia-Ukraine tensions. President Biden addresses surging gun violence. And lawmakers press FAA administrators about botched 5G rollouts near major airports. With more on these stories, it's Nadia Ramlagan with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Diplomacy is still a door that's open. I would strongly recommend that Putin think about that.
Idaho Republican Senator Jim Reich on a potential Moscow invasion of Ukraine. Lawmakers received classified briefings on tensions between the two countries and a counterterrorism raid that killed a top ISIS leader. Republican Bernie Moreno dropped out of the crowded Ohio Senate primary Thursday, citing a conversation with former President Donald Trump. Moreno was a leading GOP contender to replace retiring Republican Senator Rob Portman. At a hearing, lawmakers pressed FAA Administrator Stephen Dixon on why Verizon and AT&T turned off 5G towers near major airports due to safety concerns over interference with plane landing equipment. Dixon said he did not want to point fingers, but added the FCC's process didn't serve anyone well. He also addressed the potential dangers of 5G phones if passengers don't put them on airplane mode.
These are the kinds of things that you can only determine through the kind of flight testing that we're doing now, and with the telecommunications and aviation industry sharing information with each other.
Vice President Harris delivered remarks yesterday at the National Prayer Breakfast, emphasizing the toll the pandemic has taken on Americans.
Our faith has indeed been tested, but it is that same faith, our faith in God, our faith in humanity, and our faith in what is possible. It is that same faith that I know has seen us through.
President Biden encouraged members of Congress to get to know each other outside of politics and stressed the importance of unifying a polarized nation. At New York Police Headquarters Thursday, President Biden addressed surging gun violence across the nation, joined by Congresswoman Nadia Velasquez.
Because we are on the ground, we know what works and what doesn't work.
Six NYPD officers have been shot, two fatally so far in 2022. 2 years into the pandemic, an analysis from the New York Times finds the coronavirus is killing Americans at far higher rates than people in other wealthy nations. Deaths from the Omicron variant have surpassed the fall Delta surge and are more than two-thirds as high as last winter's records. NASA has announced operations at its International Space Station will end in 2031, when the agency will direct it to crash into a remote part of the Pacific Ocean. And hundreds of thousands of homes and businesses across the U.S. lost power Thursday as utilities struggled to keep pace with wintry weather. Heavy snow is expected from the southern Rockies to northern New England. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Justice Department will expand efforts to address missing and murdered indigenous people. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Department of Justice announced this week it will scale up efforts to confront the crisis of missing and murdered indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people. Bert Johnson with the Mountain West News Bureau has more.
The DOJ will prioritize grant funding to help tribal governments protect their communities from sex trafficking. That includes Two-Spirit people, who are at disproportionate risk of being victimized. They belong to a non-binary gender category that was honored by many indigenous cultures before colonization. The department also plans to compile educational material aimed at protecting Native youth in a single online portal. Taylor Patterson is executive director of the Native Voters Alliance Nevada and a member of the Bishop Paiute tribe. She says the need for federal resources is greater than ever. That's because the pandemic is putting Native Americans and other people of color at greater risk for human trafficking and domestic violence.
A lot of people that would have been able to leave home or would have been able to find safe haven have not been able to do that.
Patterson says it takes a lot of time and resources to prosecute abusers because of the complicated jurisdictional boundaries between tribal nations and the federal government.
I'm hopeful, though, that there's getting to be more and more attention on this topic and more people are getting involved in how to stop it.
Last year, the Department of Interior announced a task force to help coordinate investigations into those cases by federal and tribal authorities. I'm Bert Johnson.
A bill in the New Mexico legislature to create an annual event called Missing in New Mexico is being heard Friday in the House committee. The legislation requires the Department of Public Safety to sponsor the Missing Persons Day event. It would provide an opportunity for individuals and families to file a missing persons report or update existing reports, submit DNA, meet with an investigator, and receive support services. The one-day event would bring together multiple partners of government and national organizations. Lawmakers who sponsored the bill say the event is a step to improving missing persons reports and offer families the opportunity to draw awareness to their relatives' cases. The legislation was developed with work of the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Relatives Task Force, which was created in 2019 and expanded last year. Meanwhile, advocates and families plan to march to the state capitol in Santa Fe Friday to host a Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women event. Two movies will be screened on MMIW topics. According to the state's Missing Persons Clearinghouse, as of January 1st, there were 946 missing persons and 20 unidentified persons reported in the National Crime Information Center. Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas will continue the spring semester online for now. Leaders informed students Thursday saying the delay to reopen campus is due to high COVID-19 cases in the county. The Student Government Association sent a letter to administrators urging for the tribal college to reopen, saying it's been a difficult start with no buildings or services available in person. Not all students want to go back to the classroom. Haskell senior Alicia Swimmer says, while she misses in-person instruction, student clubs, and services, safety is her top concern.
I'm going to wear my mask. I don't know how this is going. I don't know how long it's going to go on either. And I'm also a mother of an 11-year-old, and I also help take care of my elderly mother. We all live in Lawrence here, and I'd rather keep them safe than go back to business as usual. So I think it's because people are too quick to try to get back. That's why it's not going away. It's getting worse.
Classes started online on January 18th. Leaders will revisit the issue in March. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, February 4th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Caitlin Backus. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Nadia Romligon, and Eric Tegatoff. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Connor's.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, a New York Times opinion piece by editorial board member Jesse Wegman said that debunking Republicans' baseless, self-serving claims of voter fraud was always a fool's game, because the professional vote fraud crusaders are not in the fact business. Well, the suggestion of that seems to be that even addressing such claims amounts to giving them oxygen. But there's a difference between airing claims and training a scrutinizing or disinfectant light on them. It's actually really journalists' choice which of those they do. The spate of new election meddling laws proposed in Arizona suggests that looking away is not really the answer. But Trumpers' loss in Arizona could also map a way forward, if you are interested in that. Our guest is interested. Stephen Rosenfeld is editor and chief correspondent of Voting Booth, a project of the Independent Media Institute. Also on the show, if you think the little guy is left out of Wall Street deals, well, you're not wrong about that. But are things like Bitcoin the answer? Is cryptocurrency a leveling force? Or is it just a different flavor of grift that plays on that not unfounded little guy frustration? Our guest gets at what's new and what's old in this description of cryptocurrency as the people's Ponzi. Sohail Mortazavi is a writer based in Chicago. His recent piece on cryptocurrency appears on jacobinmag.com. That's coming up. We'll get right to it. Counterspin is brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group Fair. When there are people transparently, fervently invested in presenting election results they don't like as endlessly arguable, ultimately bendable to the will of whoever yells loudest and longest, it's important that there be some evidentiary anchor. But when that evidence is provided, it's still largely up to news media whether or not it anchors public conversation. We are at a moment where corporate news media are unfortunately reflecting A.J. Liebling's view of the press as the weak slat under democracy.